Players in financial markets moved toward a more cautious posture after Turkey shot down that Russian warplane today. From Marketplace, I'm David Brancaccio. London's 100-share index is down 0.9% now, and the key stock index in Russia is down 2%. Some context on that second one. Russian stocks by the close yesterday had reached their highest level since 2008 amid signs of some thawing in relations between Moscow and the West. Brenda Kelly is chief analyst at London Capital Group.
We're falling for the second day here in the UK and European stocks, with the FTSE and the DAX dropping to levels last seen in the middle part of this month. The Russian jet being shot down by two Turkish jets is plaguing investor confidence at the moment, and we're seeing a certain amount of rush into the likes of the US dollar, the yen, and even gold is starting to stage something of a recovery.
Higher U.S. interest rates to come are also driving up the dollar these days. Commodities are priced in U.S. dollars, driving down commodities value.
At this moment in time, we've seen iron ore at record lows. You're seeing copper at six-year lows, and even oil is trading higher a little bit with those rising geopolitical tensions, but certainly a degree of, dented sentiment and risk off in these markets ahead of the U.S. GDP later on.
Economist Brenda Kelly. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are down in the 0.4% range now. The international food giant Nestle admitted today that slaves catch some of the fish in some of its products. Under pressure from non-governmental organizations and some sharp reporting on the problem of poor migrant workers coerced into slavery on fishing vessels off of Thailand, Nestle had commissioned an investigation. The company has a plan now to use punishment, rewards, and auditors to improve the situation. Nestle's report suggests that every company that gets seafood from that part of the world may have a problem with slave labor. In the U.S., poultry populations this year suffered the worst outbreak of bird flu ever. 7.5 million turkeys gone. Some experts were worried this would affect Thanksgiving meals, but it didn't work out that way, as Marketplace's Sabri Benishor reports.
The price of your Thanksgiving turkey was baked in a long time ago.
That turkey was actually flash frozen back in March, before the avian influenza really hit the Midwest.
Keith Williams is with the National Turkey Federation. The Thanksgiving turkeys were not only frozen back then, they were sold back then, too.
Supermarkets already contract way in advance.
Plus, Thanksgiving turkeys are females. Bird flu killed mostly males. Also, the farmers who were hit, and they were hit hard, were mostly in Minnesota.
The rest of the country continued to produce turkey.
On top of that, supermarkets discount turkeys heavily.
I've got the ads here from yesterday's paper.
Thomas Elam is president of Farm Econ.
Turkey's on sale for 50% off. It's a device that supermarkets have used for years.
Come for the turkey, stay for the pumpkin pie. According to the USDA, the U.S. will produce 228 million turkeys, a drop of about 4%. Prices, they say, will probably be the same as last year. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishor for Marketplace.
Rational economics doesn't always govern how we make decisions about our money in the real world. As part of our series, Brain Drain, with Marketplace's Wealth and Poverty Desk, we're exploring the ways in which our minds are rigged to cost us money. This morning, a conversation about setting financial goals. Colin Kammerer is a professor of behavioral finance and economics at Caltech. He looked at how taxi drivers in New York made decisions about when to keep driving and when to pack it in for the day.
The standard theory is that what they should do is they should think during the day, should I drive one more hour? What's the cost and what's the benefit? We had a sort of a hunch and talked to some drivers who said, well, I often kind of have a target, an amount of money I hope to earn that day. And when I get near the target, I often stop. They often will reach it quickly on a really good day, and it'll take a lot of hours on a bad day. So they're working a lot of hours at low wage and a very few hours at the high wage, which is clearly a mistake. They can switch around their hours, we found, and drive long hours on good days and earn about 20% more money and not drive any extra hours in total.
It's so funny because often targets are useful in human behavior. You set targets for savings. That can help you do the right thing. But the targets are what? Getting in the way in a sense?
Yeah. So targets are useful if it's very helpful to have a kind of sharp heuristic, a certain number of miles you run each day, or for a writer, they're trying to generate a certain number of words and kind of stick to a schedule. So they can often help solve a self-control problem. And for the drivers, it may be doing that too. It may be that, you know, rather than fretting every hour about, well, I don't know, is it time to quit, that they can set themselves kind of on autopilot and the target tells them when to stop.
We live in an economy that is changing, and one of the major features now is the so-called gig economy. Uber drivers or people who do Instacart shopping, they're sort of like personal shoppers. It seems that this research would have an implication for a lot of people who have to figure out how much time is worth the effort in whatever it is they're doing.
Yes, that's right. So I would expect we'd see what we've seen in the original cab data and the subsequent ones, which is that there's some sensitivity to reaching a target. And also, I think we'll see an experience effect so that an Uber driver who isn't really used to responding to, say, a surge price because, you know, they've hit their quota, as they drive longer, they realize they need to make hay when the sun shines.
Professor Kammerer, so let's say things fall apart for you at Caltech and you find yourself behind the wheel of a cab. What strategy do you think you would pursue?
I would be very rational, or tried to be. I would have a pretty sophisticated algorithm trying to forecast marginal wages in the next 2 or 3 hours and decide on that basis. I will add that you can only afford to quit on the slow days if you're going to really work harder on the long days. So if you think, well, I'll take off today, but tomorrow if it's really busy, I'm definitely going to put my full 12 hours in, and you don't do that, then you're going to end up driving less hours and earn less money.
Colin Kammerer is a professor of behavioral finance and economics at Caltech. Professor, thank you for this.
My pleasure.
Our producers are Justin Ho, Katie Long, and Beatty Jiang. From studios at Montclair State University today, as our New York studio gets an overhaul, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.